Now, you mentioned in your article that fake news can meddle in the politics of democracies, manipulate public opinion, and create profit. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about why fake news is news is used? Sorry.
Well, there have been quite a few interesting articles, studies, and in fact research papers done on fake news recently, particularly looking at this practical dimension of it. Why do people do it? Well, one researcher in this area, Claire Wardle, in fact, published a whole table of reasons for why fake news is produced. But broadly, you can divide them into political and ideological agendas and related agendas like just wanting to cause mischief. And the other side of it is simply for profit. Profit because you can generate a lot of web traffic, and of course people like to talk about, oh, this thing went viral on YouTube or this thing went viral on whatever social medium and generated a lot of traffic. Anything that goes viral in the sense it generates a lot of traffic will typically generate a lot of advertising revenue. There have been quite a few interesting reports and papers written about the so-called Macedonian fake news industry, which during the 2016 US federal election was raking in hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of advertising revenue from bogus news websites that were being promoted in the US via social media.
Now, you were a journalist for the Australian Financial Review. How does fake news impact journalistic institutions like the one you work for?
Well, the work I did for AFR was on a contract basis. I was never a full-time journalist. It does impact in a multiplicity of ways. But I think the most damaging way is when journalists themselves rely on social media as a source of data rather than going out and ferreting out the facts for themselves. There has been an increasing propensity in a lot of popular media to rely on social media sources, which sometimes are in fact quite accurate, as we've seen, for instance, with the Arab Spring problem. A lot of government agencies and a lot of journalists on the ground were less able to actually capture data of what was actually happening in real time than people who were scanning the social media and looking at other people's tweets and social media posts. So I think the problem here that we have then is that mainstream media in some respects ends up being joined at the hip with social media, and then you end up with all of these recurring problems of verifiability, determining what the veracity of some particular report or stated claim or fact might actually be.
So, based on your research, how do you think we can stop fake news?
Well, the paper itself doesn't propose particular fixes or stops. We identified the fact that fake news is very, very sensitive to costs incurred in distribution. Now, to take a big picture view, if we really want to kill off fake news, you really need to approach this from a perspective more like epidemiology, like how do you stop an infectious disease? Well, you try to interdict the source of the pathogen. You try to knock out the distribution channels that spread the pathogen. And finally, you try to immunize the victims of this particular pathogen. So if we look at that approach and transpose that into the context of social media, then you would say you try to educate and encourage people to be more skeptical and critical of what gets served up to them on their news feed. In other words, Is this too good to be true? Is this too silly to be true?
Mm.
You know, is the source credible in the first place? So you discourage people from spreading it.
So you think, sorry to interrupt, but you think that it's important to put the onus on the consumers rather than maybe through regulation of the sites or something to stop fake news?
I wouldn't take that position. As I said, I think you have to hit every part of the distribution channel, and users who go and share bad, let's say, well, in effect, fake news, dubious reports, they're just making a bad problem worse. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the onus must fall wholly on the consumers and de facto redistributors, because you've got this whole upstream chain of people who are producing the fake news and people who are actually introducing it into social media channels and mainstream media channels. So you need to also look at mechanisms for dealing with that. And that may be a regulation thing, although I am very, very skeptical that regulation can be designed that's not going to do things like interfere with free speech.
Mm. And it seems as though the world is a bit more awake to fake news following the 2016 election and other political events of the last couple of years. Do you think fake news has declined at all in its how much is out there, or do you think it's still as strong as ever?
Well, I haven't done any surveys or any data analysis to give you a really informed opinion on whether it's going up in intensity or going down in intensity. I think that's probably something that would be quite difficult to actually measure, because ultimately you're concerned about what effect it's producing. Is it producing a big effect or a modest effect or a small effect, rather than, you know, what volume of traffic, how many million bogus tweets. Now, we have seen a lot of effort go into, in particular, shutting down known problematic fake news accounts. There's been quite a few reports in the press, particularly some of the mischief the Russian government's been up to. There's been an active effort to shut them down in social media. Having said that, there's been an active effort on their part, at least according to one report I read recently, to do a better job of producing bogus accounts and bogus websites to make them look real, and therefore to fool people who might be doing a superficial audit trying to look for bogus websites or bogus accounts.
Well, the internet is ever growing, so I guess we'll have to wait and see how much of an impact fake news continues to have on our society. Dr. Karp, thank you so much for joining us here on The Daily this morning.
My pleasure.